This is the Business Report with Gary Strubel on Nova 103.5.
Good evening. It's 6 o'clock. It's a Thursday and you're on Nova 103.5. And that means it's time for the Business Report with myself, Gary Strubel. Welcome to it. I hope you had a good day. The cloud buildup around the country has resulted in rain in some areas. And so some good news for Namibians. Lots of good news in tonight's show as we go off to France to track the movements of President Hage Geingob as he looks for funding coming out of COP26. We'll be talking to the ambassador to France and Spain, Portugal, Italy and Monaco. We will have a unique singing display by one of Namibia's most esteemed businessmen here on the Business Report. Dr. Lekki Hangala will be our spotlight guest tonight, and if you miss his singing, you'll be sorry. Also coming up later, Alec Hogg will unpack South Africa's midterm budget for us, fresh off the presses, as he spent all day listening to how our neighbor will look to rescue their economy. Romain Mostert comes in and talks about which stocks he would buy, and importantly, which stock he doesn't think he would buy. A little bit more about MTC as well. He's from Cirrus Capital, and we'll also be off to Dubai, where we'll take a look at Namibia's pavilion at the World Dubai Expo 2020. And lastly, we'll chat to Don Strauss about the settlements reached in the construction workers sector of just 2.6%. So lots to go in the show. But first up, it's time for the BizNews Flash Briefing.
Rebuilding the economy starts now. RMB Namibia Corporate and Investment Banking, proud partner of BizNews.
Coalition talks between parties continue with the kingmaker in Gauteng, Action SA, in active talks with the Democratic Alliance and the Economic Freedom Fighters. Action SA leader Herman Mashaba left the DA in 2019, citing the election of Helen Zille as federal chair as the reason. His concern was reportedly that under Zille, inequality and poverty would not be a priority. While Mashaba considers his past with the DA water under the bridge, he says that negotiations will put the poor front and center. The party is also in talks with the EFF, though it says it has some reservations so far. Action SA won't work with the ANC, and the DA refuses to work with the ANC or EFF. While it is no secret that Eskom's power grid is incredibly vulnerable and under strain, revelations from the group this week showed exactly how fine a line it is treading daily. So much so that a power trip in Zambia had a cascading effect on the local power supply, which ultimately led to stage 4 load shedding hitting this week. The imported power from Zambia is typically stable and gives Eskom room to breathe. However, for the relatively short period it was out, Eskom's hydro and gas solutions could barely cover the shortfall. Experts say Eskom has to be more conservative with its emergency solutions, while worries over diesel shortages persist. Eskom CEO Andre De Reiter says he will not resign of his own accord because there's no use putting a new jockey on a dead horse. The CEO was responding to calls from unions and business groups that he fall on his sword over load shedding, where 2021 has been the worst year for blackouts on record. De Reiter said he serves at the behest of the Eskom board, and if they want him gone, that is a decision they must make. However, he said that it's more important to have continuity in management, as the many executive changes in the last decade have only contributed to the company's instability.
A sudden storm shouldn't disrupt your long-term outlook. Access RMB's flexible short-term liquidity. Rebuilding our economy starts now. RMB Namibia, a division of First National Bank of Namibia Limited.
Gary Strubel on the Business Report.
Time now for the lead story. And the lead story is proudly brought to you by Alexander Forbes. Alexander Forbes, let us help you secure your financial well-being now and in the future. And as we talk about the future, COP26 on the go at the moment in Glasgow, where the world leaders are gathered, trying to figure out a way to balance capitalism, socialism, all the isms, as well as trying to figure out a way to not make the earth uninhabitable to humans in such short order. Coming out of that, obviously, is sustainable energy is one of the areas in which there's significant investment being made. And we were lucky enough to catch up to the Namibian ambassador to France and UNESCO permanent representative, Albertus Achomoub, who's in France. Good evening, Ambassador. I trust you are well.
It's entirely my pleasure to be speaking to you. Family is fine. We are entering winter, so it's a little bit chilly, but all is well. All the Namibians who work in France representing our beautiful republic are also doing well.
How ready is Namibia in terms of the regulatory project?
At the present, the good thing is that the sector, because it's new in the world, and the fewer regulations you have at the beginning to be able to allow entrepreneurs, true entrepreneurs and scientists to begin the work, I think sometimes it's better. But all of this is being done in the context of our broader regulations that deal with energy and our efforts at having a very dynamic energy mix where renewables and green alternatives will play a big part. So all in all, Namibia is geared. We're ready to welcome investors and role players. The first ones have already indicated in awarded contract. There will be more opportunities coming up in this space.
Can we expect to see a tax policy on green hydrogen similar to other fuels in Namibia, or will there be a relief to the nature of product?
I think the objective of government is not to penalize those that make an investment. This is a new sector to decarbonize our economy. Namibia is not amongst the countries in the world that are responsible for the climate crisis that we are in, because we are one of the lowest emitters in the world. But with the future in mind, we're doing this to ensure that we have clean energy supply for generations to come. We are naturally endowed with the sun, and it will be a crime for the present generation of leaders not to harness the and harvest all of that natural endowment that we have. So in relation to the fiscal space, whatever government will do will never be aimed at stifling the development, the growth, and the innovations within the sector. It'll be to the contrary. It'll be to encourage role players to make the leap. It's revolutionary, and we will have revolutionary tax regime around this. It cannot be business as usual. We cannot apply traditional treatments as far as tax legislation is concerned. It's something that we think allows Namibia to leapfrog into the future.
When do we envisage to see the official launch of the regulatory framework for the green hydrogen regulatory landscape?
From government perspective, what we've done is we have what called the Green Hydrogen Council. That is a cabinet appointed body chaired by our Director General of the National Planning Commission. There is a green hydrogen champion who is the President's economic advisor. What we are finalizing is a very clear roadmap in respect of the entire value chain. The upside of this is that we are also going to be decarbonizing how companies produce. For instance, in our port infrastructure, we have to look at having green alternatives so that carbon footprint is minimized by everybody that produces anything in Namibia now and in the future. Transport sector will be impacted. Trucks would probably, in all likelihood, soon run on green hydrogen. You'll have heavy lifting equipment. The value chain is immense. Its potential is great. And so soon, in the course of 2022, you should see government coming out a lot more aggressively explaining what the future would look like in a much more clearer terms. But we've started that journey in less than a year. I think this is a good beginning for Namibia and for the developing South.
What benefits are in store for Namibians in the collaboration with the French Green Hydrogen Task Force?
That's a very good question. We had a very productive undertaking with all of the role players. That's the financiers, banks, producers, potential consumers of the product, whatever will be produced in Namibia. Everybody acknowledges Namibia's natural advantage because we have one of the longest sun days, if not the longest sun days in the world. Then we have a huge coastline. Of course, it's a conservation area. We'll never compromise the conservation of a natural environment at the expense of industrial expansion. But what we are doing is to use that which we have and present to the French the greatest opportunity. What we've already received in very firm terms is that there were two companies that are already on the ground in Namibia. One of them has been in Namibia for the last 10 years, but they are now looking at the green hydrogen alternatives to move into. They are already doing solar power. They have begun solar and wind. Now green hydrogen will be the next. The other company has also begun and will go to financial closure by the end of next year with an alternative energy production, and that will have a significant impact in the mix. They will have green hydrogen as an alternative. So those are two French companies that have already indicated that they have started the work. There will be two more visits visit in early January, as soon as Namibia returns from our holiday season. Companies that will not just go to sea, but they've already done their preliminary feasibility studies, but they will now go into completing those feasibility studies with an intention to make the investments. We are not spending public money. We are inviting private sector to ensure that this development is private sector led and that the investment that accrues into the sector is private sector money with a benefit for the broader Namibian population, both from the perspective of creating new jobs, but also new skill sets in a sector that we've never been in. So younger people or those that would like to be retrained, engineers and so forth, have an opportunity to now enter a sector that's new to the world, new to Namibia, but definitely the sector and production potential for the future. Thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure.
In our lead story this evening, that was Namibian Ambassador to France and UNESCO Permanent Representative Albertus Achomub, who's in France on the tail of our president as well. And that was the lead story brought to you by Alexander Forbes. Alexander Forbes, let us help you secure your financial well-being now and in the future.
Gary Strubel on the Business Report.
Lots of good stuff still coming up in the show, but now it's time for the Spotlight. And this Business Report Spotlight is brought to you by Safland Property Group. Safland Property Group, a leading provider of property services since 1992. Our guest tonight in the Spotlight, where we look at the lives and doings of prominent Namibians, is Dr. Lekki Hangala, who is currently the executive chairman of the Hangala Group and has exceptional directorship experience. He's been the managing director of NamPower, permanent secretary in the Ministry of Mines and Energy. He holds a PhD in geology and mineralogy, obtained from the University of Helsinki in Finland back in 1987. He's got a BSc and MSc, and he also holds a certificate in management from the very prestigious Harvard University in the United States. Dr. Lekki Hangala, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Dr. Hangala, please tell us a little bit about your journey to your current position.
I studied geology in Finland, and after independence, I was the first permanent secretary of Mines and Energy from 1990 to 1995, and thereafter I formed Hangala Group, a diversified company. We are in financial services, we are in construction, property development, and agribusiness. Well, it has been a long journey, a tough journey, but also we are counting our blessings.
Thank you, Doctor. Tell me, what are some of the biggest opportunities that we are not exploiting in terms of business as a country?
Well, I think naturally agribusiness, to produce our own food, to process our own food and to feed our people, is one of the business opportunities. We saw now an opportunity of going green in terms of energy. We have the sun, we have the sea, we have the land. So, yes, these are some of the areas.
All right, Dr. Hangala, this is the bit where you get to pick a song that you love to give us a little bit of insight into your musical taste, and also to allow someone to criticize you, because that's what happens when you pick your best songs. So tell us a little bit about, or tell us, what song are we playing for you tonight?
A song, Tarif and Maris, is so fair from my heart, Ekferang on their heart, sing. That's my song.
That is brilliant. Well, we don't even need to play the song now. We've had the best version we could possibly have, but let's play it for you anyway. It's Len Miller and Steph Boss with Sorry Marie.
Bye. krokodil, een vis, er sleept jou altijd water toe. Ik gooi jou op een skip, weer een lange, lange trip. En USC weet waar naartoe. En ik het gevecht weer droog, gevecht weer wat ik gloor. Gevecht weer hier die land wat brand. En ik is moe van die oorlog, moe om nog te vlug. En al wat ik nou verlang is, bring mij terug naar die oude Transvaal. Daar waar mijn Sari woont. Daaronder in die milies bij die groendoring boog. Daar woont mijn Sari maar
in huis te gaan was daar, terug naar die oude Transvaal. My lieveling persoon sal seker op daar fiets om my met te kus te beloon.
Len Miller and Steph Bors with Sari Mare, not a song you hear a lot on Nova. And it's the choice tonight of Dr. Lakey Hangala, who picked the song and who we're talking to in the spotlight. Dr. Hangala, will you be exploring the opportunities that are presented by green hydrogen energy?
Yes. As Angala Group, we are looking to go into power generation, particularly the renewable, but not yet had gone into green energy as part of the Condesta. But in power generation, yes. And going green in the power generation. Yeah, why not?
We all know the adage that if you really want someone to be healthy, teach them to fish. Don't give them a fish. And in terms of that, we look to entrepreneurship to help build our economy. Dr. Hangala, what is your message to young Namibian entrepreneurs?
Two things. Number one, they must finish their education. Number two, they must be very focused. You know, countries are built by entrepreneurs. They must have courage to go in business, pick up that what excites them. They must work together amongst themselves or with international players so that they form business. Too much of our economy is dominated by public sector, government, and state-owned enterprises. The time has come now for young Namibian men and women to join the business sector and drive our economy, in all sectors of our economy. And they must start. And when they start, I'm sure there will be no stop. Thank you very much. Okay, bye.
That's Dr. Lakey Hangala in this evening's spotlight. Wonderful man and a wonderful sense of humor and a wonderful example to every one of us in the country. The Business Report Spotlight brought to you by Safland Property Group. Safland Property Group offering the widest range of property services in Namibia.
The Business Report. It's the Business Report with Gary Strubel.
Right, interesting man, Dr. Hangala. And you can catch all of that on our podcast later. If you missed some of it and you'd like to hear him sing again, get along to nova.com.na or you can go look for our podcast on Iono. It's now time for the BizNews Wrap of the Week. And the BizNews Wrap of the Week is brought to you by APS, African Personnel Services. We work for you. So on the line with me now from South Africa, a founder of BizNews, and a man who's been in lockup all day. I know that isn't prison. It's a little embargoed room where they give you access to confidential information before the budget speech. Alec Hogg, welcome to the Business Report again.
Yeah, for sure, Gary. It's been an interesting day. I do it twice a year, come down to Cape Town. I think I brought fantastic weather here, or so I've been told. It really, you know, when the Cape is in her finery, there's no better place in the world. And it's been like that today. But I've been in lockup, going through documents from Treasury ahead of the new finance minister's speech. It was day 106 for him today. So it's the first time he's gone before Parliament to tell us about the state of the South African finances and what's going to be done about it. And it was really illuminating in many respects.
Right, so let's perhaps, that's obviously the biggest story on the platform today, and will be, I'm sure, for another day or two. Let's give us the highlights. What is his plan?
Well, we've had a succession of interesting finance ministers, put it that way. Trevor Manuel was South Africa's best finance minister by some distance and longest serving. But after him, we've had some interesting people. We had the communist Pravin Gordhan, who did a good job on spending, but didn't really, in other words, cutting spending, but didn't really know how to get the economy going. And then we had some really bad finance minister appointed by Zuma, who is best forgotten, Malusi Gigaba. And then Tito Mboweni came along and was much loved by the international community because he's got a good understanding, a good feeling for public finance, being a former Reserve Bank governor. And we didn't know what Enoch Godongwana was going to be like, given that he has a trade union background. But I was impressed today, Gary. He's got a good feel for it. He's obviously got lots of political capital within the ANC. He's the head of the ANC's economic development grouping. And he's very close to the president, Cyril Ramaphosa. And when it comes to running finances in a country like South Africa, especially the position we're in right now, which is not a very good one, the most important thing is political capital, because if you try to stop spending, stop the overspending that that happened during the Zuma era, and South Africa's spending has been growing over the last 13 years at 8.8% a year, which means it just goes deeper and deeper into debt because the revenue is nowhere near as rapid a growth there. So you need someone with political capital who's going to say, this is how we stop spending, and then to have the imagination to say, this is how we're going to bring the economy to start growing again. And I think he's probably able to do both.
So this is a midterm budget. It doesn't give him a lot of leeway to make radical changes at this point. And perhaps what were the one or two elements out of what he said that stuck with you most that might lead us somewhere?
Well, the critical thing was when the midterm budget policy statement began in 1997 by Trevor Manuel. What he said it was about was not to come out and make changes to the financial situation, because that should be on a three-year rolling basis. In fact, he brought that in as well. So it's not a year-to-year thing as happened in the preceding years when people would watch the budget, and if there were changes, they could play the markets and change bonds and stocks and all kinds of things would be affected once a year. He said he wanted to take that out of the system so that there was more certainty. So we've got this three-year plan, and every 6 months, the main budget coming in February, where there are some changes, and then you have the halfway stage, as it were, to say, how are we doing, what's happened in between, and what is our policy about? And that's really what this is about. What happened in the last 6 months was that because of the commodities boom, South Africa got in 128 billion rand more than had been anticipated in February. Those are huge numbers. And the reason for that was that iron ore prices, coal prices, and platinum prices, which is really the heart of what South Africa earns from its exports, went up very strongly. The question that you have to do now is have a look and see, well, how are they treating this? And they haven't treated it very well, because they spent about 108 billion of that already. Okay, we did have COVID. We did have the riots. There have been hopefully external and one-off reasons for that. But the windfall from the commodities has not been that well used. But then how do they budget into the future as a consequence of that? And that's critical. And Enoch Godongwana has come through that with flying colors. He's budgeting in a very conservative manner. He's got a very good grasp of the hole that South Africa's finances are in, and We are sitting on a debt-to-GDP ratio, which has been revised down to 7.8%, only revised because Stats SA went and increased the size of the economy the other day, rebased the economic numbers, and suddenly we got an economy which says your debt-to-GDP is 7.8%, sorry, your budget deficit is 7.8% instead of 9%, as it should, as it was previously. Those are all, those are horrific numbers, and they are kind of in the top five in the last 50 years. But to get down to 3 to 4% is a lot easier from 7 than it is from 9. So in many ways, the international community will look at this and they'll take heart. They'll say, this guy's, he knows the problem he's in. What's he doing about it? Primarily restricting spending from government, which is, we'll see how well that works out. But at least he does have the support of Ramaphosa. So there's a chance that they might finally get their hands on that. But more important is, how do you grow the economy? And there are two big things that have happened there, which you can pick the signals up from. The first one is, he said, for the last 13 years, we've been trying to fix Eskom, the monopoly, monopolistic electricity supplier to South Africa. He said, we failed with that. Now we are focusing on fixing electricity supply. Massive move for the ANC for a centralist kind of operation, and that means bringing in the private sector. The second thing he says is that this commodity boom, if we're going to benefit from it, and the country already has to a big degree in the last 6 months, we've got to get, not again, don't try and fix Transnet, because Transnet is unfixable, the monopoly that takes all the minerals to the ports, but actually fix the transport system that gets the minerals to the port. So there's a, it might sound subtle and it might sound small, but actually the South African context of a socialist government, it's a massive transformation of thinking.
Well, it gives us an indication that there's at the very least perhaps another tacit acknowledgement that the current system is broken and isn't working. And if the words start changing, perhaps so do the deeds. Just really interesting, lastly, coming out of this, we see that growth, GDP growth in 2022, 23 and 24, averaging only 1.7% per annum. That's a very low growth environment. This is obviously a budget. But that also perhaps says government isn't particularly bullish about their ability to stimulate that, Anik.
Yeah, I like the way that he's used that. Remember, the population growth in South Africa is about 1.6%. So if you only growing at 1.7, forget it. You got no chance. But what he was saying was that that on our projections is what's going to happen. We've got to do something structural, radical, and bring in the private sector, unleash human potential in South Africa. And that really was the, if you're looking for hope out of this budget, that would be the hope that you'd grasp onto. If you're looking to criticize it, well, we've been promised this kind of thing and the changes so many times before. As recently as in February, the figures that were put down for public sector wages were conservative. They were telling us, Peter Mboweni, they've already been surpassed by 20 billion rand. So with a recent wage agreement. So there's a lot that you can nitpick on, but I prefer to look at what the mini budget or this medium term budget is meant to be, which is a statement of intent. And the statement of intent is 1.7% growth in the economy is pathetic and it's not enough. And we've got to do something structural to get that sorted out. So this is what we're going to be doing. I left there happier than when I arrived, and that hasn't always been the case when I went into lockup.
Alec Hogg, thank you. Your views and first-hand experience very valuable to us here in Namibia as we watch our southern neighbors try and figure out how to chart the whole of the SADC region out of the hole that we're in. There's a beautiful little summary of the medium-term budget in a nutshell story on the BizNews platform, one of the top two or three stories, and a little bit of further analysis as well on that you go to biznews.com. Alec, we'll talk next week.
Thanks, Gary. Look forward to it.
Thanks so much. And the BizNews wrap, proudly brought to you by APS, African Personnel Services. We work for you.
The Business Report.
It's Thursday evening. It's the Business Report here on Nova 103.5. And it's now time for the NSX Market Watch. The NSX Market Watch brought to you by Express Credit. Money when you need it most. And joining me this evening, Romay Mostert, Director at Cirrus Capital. Romay, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Gary.
Today we want to talk a little bit about what's going on the NSX and perhaps one or two other little items of interest that are happening in our financial circle. So let me start off with that. How's the last while been on the NSX? Are there exciting things happening?
Yeah, I must say this year so far, it's been an interesting year. We usually trading is dominant or is dominated by the likes of the Namibia Breweries and FNB and so on. So far this year, Paratus is the biggest, has seen the most trading on the exchange with 112 million roughly exchanging hands year to date. And followed by FNB. So that's quite a new mix. And I think it shows that, investors on the NSX is quite interested in getting involved in Paratus, which is busy with exciting things, putting fiber in the ground and so on. Then FNB has also been quite active. I think FNB, if you look at the various banks, they probably score the best in terms of quality metrics, potential intrinsic value, discounts to intrinsic value and so on. So we see some potential upside there. So basically, just in terms of the month so far, Paratus is up 6.3%. The top performer, Namibia Breweries, up 1.5%. Now, the other end, Oryx Properties is down just over 3%. I think the impact of COVID and the real implications on real estate and people working from home and so on definitely having an effect on the property sector.
Okay, so is it fair to say that you're not liking that stock at the moment for a short-term rebound?
No, so I think there's still a bit of selling pressure on Oryx. In our view, it should probably go quite a bit lower. The problem is the company sits with a key asset that's very exposed to Vintook, specifically Vintook. I think if you look at the sectoral breakdowns and so on, it's mostly retail and in Vintook, so it doesn't give you that extra diversification.
We're talking Marua Mall.
Marua Mall now, yes. And I mean, Marua's got stiff competition from the likes of Grove and Burn Hill that's recently seen facelifts, and where Marua is in that tough spot now where if you want to spend money on it, but now is not really the time considering the weakness in the market. So no, I'm not that optimistic about it.
All right, cool. So the listing stocks doesn't happen a lot. We've got a big stock coming to market in the next couple of weeks. There's been a lot of hype around the IPO. And the pre-listing activity. Perhaps the first question, before we get into the meat of it, just take us through the process for MTC as it rolls onto the market in the next 2 weeks. Where are we and what happens next?
So basically, MTC opened this prospectus for investors to invest in it, and I think in September, and then that prospectus closed, or the offer closed the 1st of November. So on the 1st of November at 12 o'clock, you should have submitted your applications and money should be in the bank if you're interested in the share. Then they go through a process of actually reconciling the offers, the applications that they've received with the bank accounts, making sure that everything is tying up. And then on the 17th of November now, they will go back to the market and confirm, listen, this is what we've put on offer to issue shares to the market. This is the interest that we had. And yes, you were successful in your subscription. We'll give you 100% of your shares. Or if they've oversubscribed, and if it's a hot IPO, then you will see that you only get a fraction of what you were interested in. By the 17th, you will know that. And the 19th, it's open for trading. And at 9 o'clock in the morning when the market opens, you can trade in MTC shares.
And that's a big day for the company, right? Because that's when they know what the market thinks of them.
Yeah, so usually I think when you're more like active exchanges like the NASDAQ and so on, you will see the ring-belling ceremony. Usually, if there was buyers beforehand that didn't get shares, enough shares or as much as they wanted, then they will try and buy on it. And if there's some price movement, you can actually see some nice activity going on then.
Okay, well, let's hope it's an exciting day for the Namibian, for the NSX.
Yeah.
So into the meat of that then, what are you advising your clients? They're looking at MTC. We're looking at a big parastatal with a monopoly in a relatively small market. But they are so way ahead of anyone else, no one will ever catch them in the short term. That's what a lot of people are saying. So
yeah.
What's your view?
So our view differs a bit in terms of whether you're an institutional client looking to comply with NAMFISA requirements in terms of your asset exposure, or if you're a private client that can literally invest anywhere in the world. If I'm an institutional client, it's another asset class that's coming to the market. It's another way of achieving the returns for my client. And I think the 6.5% dividend yield that you will get from it is appealing, and considering that it will increase over time with inflation and so on, it's appealing to accomplish my goals in institutional mandate. However, if I'm a retail client and I can pick any share in the world that I can invest into. I'm not restricted in terms of regulations of where I must invest and so on. Then I think there's better opportunities. The big struggle that we see with MTC is that they currently have more SIM cards outstanding than you have people in the country, which makes you ask the question, where's growth going to come from? So you're definitely not buying MTC as a growth play. And the problem with that is then immediately foreigners that looks at African markets will also not be interested. They're not buying MTC for dividend play. They want to see multi-year growth of 20-30% per year coming through, and then they will be interested. If foreigners are not involved, I think there's a high probability we will see an undersubscription on this share. 3.1 billion is a lot of money to raise from the Namibian market. We've previously had Standard Bank. I think they were the biggest at 700 million. This is literally three times the size of that. And I think due to the lack of foreign interest, we might just see an undersubscription. And the problem with that then is post-listing, when it starts trading, all your local institutions are filled up. They've got what they wanted. And your retail investors that invested for the quick buck might just see, oh, no one's buying it, and then start offering the share lower. And you might just be in a position where a year from now it's actually a bit lower from where it listed.
Okay, interesting times. And a lot of pressure for government. They've put a lot of reputation on the line with this particular action. The telco space, we know, is an exciting one all around the world.
Yes.
But this is a good example of the downside of allowing monopolies to take place, is where does growth come from?
Right? Yep, and especially if you're restricted to a certain geographical area. Like MTC is not going to grow into Botswana or Zambia, Angola, or anything like that.
Just remind me what the float is.
The float is 3.1 billion that they're offering. And then government will retain another 3 billion roughly.
And that equates to about 50%?
Yeah, so that's 49% is the float, and it will be just over 6 billion in market cap.
All right, so perhaps also something for institutional investors, government not giving up control, wanting to keep control, might also be a little flag waving.
And you don't really have a technical partner involved, someone that's in the ICT space, knowing how they want to play the game and being up to speed with all the latest technology. That said, we shouldn't underrate the MTC management. I think they've got a great management team that's been in the market a long time, and I think they really deserve a bit of credit there.
Certainly a very well-run company, one that maybe can be proud of.
Yes.
And we're all watching with anticipation as to what happens on the 19th when that bell rings and people can get their hands on it. So interesting to hear your views. That's Romain Morsett, Executive Director at Cirrus Capital. The big winners, Paratus and F&B at the moment. Good stocks, Oryx and a little bit of with some challenges ahead of them, and MTC rolling around in a few weeks. It's the NSX Market Watch. The NSX Market Watch brought to you by Express Credit. Money when you need it most.
Gary Strubel on the Business Report. The Business Report. Podcasts on Nova.com.na.
Welcome back here on the Business Report on Nova 103.5. And now, a story of a different kind as we head off to the Middle East. With me on the line is Kathy Shapushu, the Senior Manager of Marketing at the Namibia Investment and Promotions Board. Kathy, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Gary, for having me.
Cool. Today we want to talk a little bit about the Dubai World Expo 2020, which got off to a bit of a false start by being delayed for a while, but is now firmly on the go. It's been going for about a month, and Namibia is represented through the Namibia Investment and Promotions Board. So firstly, how are we doing at the Dubai Expo?
Well, I'm pleased to say that we are doing very well. We have a committed team of individuals who are working really hard to sell the country and to sell the investment potential that the country has. We have already exceeded some of the targets that we have set for ourselves. And this includes, obviously, visitors to our pavilion. There's been a great interest in our country. But one day, we had about 6,000 people walking into our pavilion, and that's a big number for an expo like that. And even in terms of the investment leads and targets that we have set for ourselves, we have already met a lot of them. We have now, in fact, stretched targets because the team is just working extremely, extremely hard. And our team at the investment board have actually already starting to engage some of these potential investors and to see how far we can take them and potentially welcome them to Namibia as investors in the near future.
That sounds like great news. Kathy, just perhaps for the benefit of those of us who'll never be fortunate enough to go off to one of these things, you know, when you think of an expo, perhaps the Ongwediva Trade Show comes to mind. What does it look like? How big is this thing? And perhaps describe the Namibian Pavilion to us a little bit as well. What does that mean?
So this expo is known as one of the biggest, if not the biggest, trade shows in the world. Think about 192 countries and 54 African countries in one place. Literally, you can almost say under one roof. And in the space of 6 months that the expo is going to run, it's expected that 25 million visitors will make their way to this expo. So that's the magnitude of what we're talking about here. And obviously for Namibia as an emerging market, it's important that we are present at these events because this is where the decisions are taken. This is where the investors are at. And for us as a country, we have to go out there. We have to market ourselves. We have to position ourselves as an investment destination, but also for tourism. So this is really what we're talking about, Gary. It's a massive, massive event.
Okay, sounds interesting. The Namibian Pavilion, is it like a like a little stand, or have you guys erected a whole village in the middle of a courtyard? Give us a sense of what the pavilion is.
Well, it is certainly not a small village. Our pavilion, walking in, first of all, it reminds you of being back in Namibia, for us Namibians at least. It reminds you of the open spaces that we have in our country. We have decorated this strategically to promote our tourism. So you find a lot of artifacts from Namibian artists, of landscapes in Namibia, world's famous dunes, logistics hub, for Namport, for instance, lots of big images that give you an idea of what are we selling as a country. We're focusing on sectors such as mining, manufacturing, diamonds, obviously, and also in agriculture. So when you walk in the pavilion, you really get a sense of this is what Namibia has to offer. And we have a little famous artifact called Onduli. Onduli is a giraffe in Oshawamba language. And everyone who comes in that pavilion wants to take a picture at Onduli. So I think if you go on NamibiaExpo.com, you get a sense of what our pavilion looks like. It's really beautiful, but also it's curated to promote the sectors that we are there to sell as a country.
Okay, brilliant. And then perhaps just lastly, give us a sense of, you know, when we talk about engaging investors and where the decisions are made, just give us a sense of the how does that work out practically? Is there a lot of behind-the-scenes meetings and seminars and presentations, or do we wait for someone to wander in and say, hi, I'd like to build a factory? Just give us a sense of what is the daily task that that team is doing.
Okay, so before I get that, Gary, if I may, I would like to give a bit of a as to why it's important for us to be at an expo, besides what I've already said previously. If we look at the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic on our economy, we are now as a country faced with the challenge of rebuilding this economy. And in doing so, events that promotions of investment become really, really important. So what we do there, we don't only sit and wait for someone to walk in. Even before the expo started, we already started doing our research in terms of what countries are going to be there, who are some of the investors that are going to be there, what are they interested in, and therefore we have meetings, B2B meetings with potential investors. We have strategic stakeholder events with other countries that are also sort of in the same market. But every month, we have a thematic event. For instance, this month, is our focus is on energy. And so on the 27th of November, we're going to an energy summit, and we're inviting, obviously, stakeholders from Namibia, the Ministry of Mines, and all other role players. And also, we're inviting other countries who are at the expo and those who are not that are interested in this sector, like now with the green hydrogen. So that's what we do on a monthly basis. And then in January, for instance, focusing on tourism, and in February and March, we're focusing on mining and diamond talks. So there's a lot of behind-the-scenes work. And as you know, investment promotion is not a one-day thing. It's not even a two-day thing. It's a long-term effort that will continue. These negotiations will continue long after they ended. But what we can assure the nation is that they will benefit each and every Namibian. Thank you, Gary.
Kathy, thank you so much for your time today. That's Kathy Sapushu from the Namibia Investment and Promotions Board, Senior Manager, Marketing and Communications. Just talking about Namibia being represented at the World Expo in Dubai 2020. That runs until the end of March next year, so still lots of time for interested investors to go along to the pavilion there and perhaps have a chat to the guys. And if you're interested in seeing what it looks like, Kathy gave out the web address, and you can go check out the Namibian Pavilion. This is the Business Report on Nova 103.5.
Namibia's business leader on Nova 103.5. This is the Business Report on Nova 103.5.
Welcome back to the Business Report on Nova 103.5. I'm Gary Strubel, and our attention turns now to a little bit of good news. Maybe it's good news. If you're a construction worker, then you should see a few extra dollars at the end of the month in your paycheck. As the news was announced that the Construction Industries Federation and NAMWU, the Metal and Allied Namibian Workers Union, reached an agreement on the increase of the minimum wage payable in the construction industry. Now, the previous minimum wage was $16.94 per hour, and it's been pushed up to $17.38. Those of you good in maths would have already have figured out that that's a 2.6% increase. And to talk to us a little bit about this settlement, Don Strauss, the Secretary General from the Namibia Employers Federation. Welcome to the show, Don.
Thank you very much, Gary. Thank you for having me.
Don, give us an idea here. This we read further down in the statement that there hasn't been an increase since April 2018, so that makes it well over 3.5 years that construction workers haven't seen any relief from inflation. At the same time, there would have been tremendous job losses in that sector as well. We know it's a sector that's been under enormous pressure the last 4 or 5 years with a slowdown of government spending. Just how important is a settlement like this, given the state of the economy in Namibia at the moment?
Well, Gary, to give some background information to this, one must realize that even before the COVID-19 pandemic became a reality in Namibia, the country has been in an economic depression for some time. So the whole COVID pandemic just was the last straw that broke the camel's back. We know that the pandemic has hit some sectors very hard, and some sectors did not feel the brunt that sharply. But as for tourism and construction and aviation, of course, when everything stopped with the lockdown in March 2020, everything basically came to a standstill. Now, in the beginning of this year, the Minister of Labour, Industrial Relations and Employment Creation created a Minimum Wage Commission. Now, the Minimum Wage Commission has been working since the beginning of this year, and they are to make their final recommendations to the minister very soon, by the end of this month already. The National Minimum Wage Commission will make their recommendations known to the minister. And basically, we are all waiting in thin suspension on what those are going to be, because we simply do not know yet. From the employer side, we have been asked to make submissions and representations to the National Minimum Wage Commission, which we did. But times are tough and very hard. So what actually transpired is that many sectors, like tourism, ask for exemption from the minimum wage, whatever it's going to be and what they're going to decide is going to be. The National Union of Namibian Workers, NUNW, commissioned a very thorough study on the issue of minimum wage. Now there has been a lot of talk and debate on the issue of minimum wage. From the employer side, we are much concerned about how we define these terms, because they are a difference between a minimum wage and, say, for instance, a living wage.
That's the thoughts of Dan Strauss, Secretary General of the Namibia's Employers Federation, on the news that the Construction Industries Federation and NAMU recently reached an agreement raising the minimum wage in that sector from $16.94 to $17.38 per hour. That amounts to a total of 44 cents per hour increase for workers. Dan also went further in our discussion to talk about the reluctance, or the seeming reluctance, to accept sectoral minimum wages and a desire to have a national minimum wage that still has a long process to follow before that is part of the Namibian business economy. But a difficult process, as always, for both business owners, employers, and governments to find the sweet spot to stimulate economic growth. That is the Business Report, and this is Nova 103.5. I'm Gary Strubel.
The Business Report, Thursdays from 6 to 7 on Nova 103.5.
I'm Angie Scholes with your weekly economics wrap. World food prices have surged to the highest in more than a decade, driven by robust demand and lackluster harvest, according to the United Nations. Prices increased for the third consecutive month in October, rising 3% over September, according to an index published by the Food and Agriculture Organization of the United Nations. We spoke to Theo Klein from Simonis & Storm, who said they expect food prices to remain high.
Globally, we've seen significant changes to weather patterns as a result of climate change, where both the northern and southern hemispheres experienced much longer and colder winters, as well as more extreme temperatures during summer seasons. All these developments have led to an over 500% increase in the United Nations Food and Agriculture Price Index in the last 12 months. With Namibia remaining a net importer of food, higher global food prices will filter through to higher prices that consumers pay at local grocery stores.
The world cryptocurrency market is worth more than $3 trillion for the first time this week, as mainstream investors increasingly jump on board. This calculation was done by CoinGecko, which tracks prices for more than 10,000 cryptocurrencies. The world's biggest cryptocurrency, Bitcoin, hit a record high $66,000 last month after taking another step towards mainstream status. It surged back above that level this week again to its all-time peak after a 5% jump. The International Air Transport Association announced a moderate rebound in air travel in September 2021 compared to August's performance. This was driven by recovery in domestic markets, in particular China, where some travel curbs were lifted following the COVID-19 outbreaks in August. International passenger demand in September was 69.2% below September 2019, fractionally worse than the 68.7% decline recorded in August, which is not good news for the Namibian economy. To find out how Africa performed, we contacted IATA's public relations and media relations advisor, Lyndon Burns.
African Airlines passenger traffic was 62.2% lower in September 2021 versus 2 years ago, and almost 4 percentage points worse than the 58.5% decline that it recorded in August this year compared to August 2019. Passenger capacity was down 49.3%, and the average passenger load factor declined to 53.7%.
South Africa's Chamber of Commerce have expressed concern about Eskom's endless load shedding. They say each stage of load shedding costs South Africa around R1 billion per day. According to reports, the Northern Cape Chamber says government needs to begin considering measures to help companies affected by load restrictions. And finally, Salomon Hay from the High Economic Intelligence says that electricity crisis experienced in South Africa, which is one of the largest economies on the continent, should be of concern to Namibia, especially in the context of African Continental Free Trade Area. We contacted Hay to explain.
We are heavily reliant on the import of electricity from Eskom. I think around 60% of our power comes from Eskom. And the power cut, one should keep an eye on that because it could spill over into the Namibian ability to keep our lights on. But what is more concerning is that South Africa is heavily industrialized, but also to make sure that it keeps jobs alive. With the pandemic, a lot of jobs have been lost on the continent, and the rolling blackouts could further dampen the recovery that we anticipate, and means that the could lead to further supply disruptions, which would then further drive our costs and which would have a direct impact on the prosperity of the Namibian economy.
Namibia's business leader on Nova 103.5.
What a show it's been. Thanks for listening. We'd love to hear your thoughts. tbr@nova.com.na if you'd like to drop us a note or tell us things you'd like us to cover here in the Business Report. We had amazing guests this evening. Next week, an even bigger show is up ahead. The show produced by Limey Lager. My thanks to her. Raymond Ziefeld as well, our technical producer, and myself, Gary Stribble. We wish you a wonderful weekend as it lies ahead. And remember, right here on Nova, to keep it business. Thanks very much for listening.
That was The Business Report on Nova 103.5. Listen to all the segments and previous episodes with our podcast service on nova.com.na. The Business Report was presented by Gary Struvel and produced by Limey Ilago and David Bishop. Comments and questions can be sent to tbr@nova.com.na.